it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. Good morning to you. In the 12 o'clock hour, we're going to visit with Stephen Stewart, Vice President, Research Director of BGR, as well as Paul Rue, Research Analyst there. We'll be talking about the city's budget, what it means, what state it is in, and what is do they have to do to have a functionally balanced budget. What does that mean? How do they move forward? We believe these issues are important enough, and we have scheduled a number of topics and guest speakers between now and early voting that starts on September 27th and ends on October 4th, a Saturday to a Saturday, for preparation of the first primary on October 11th. And we'll continue to cover these topics for you, and hopefully we'll stimulate folks going to the polls, exercising your right to vote, and trying to make a difference in this city. At 11:30, Patrick Button, Associate Professor of Economics at Tulane University, joins us. We hear a lot, like from Bernie Sanders and AOC and others who are traveling around on high-priced jets, staying in five-star hotels, eating at five-star restaurants, preaching to people that taxing the rich is going to solve all of the fiscal woes of the U.S. government. There was an article that I read the other day where an individual mathematically figured out if I took everything that the 800-plus billionaires in this country have, everything, and sold it at full market value, how much would it generate and would it make a dent in our deficit? You're going to be surprised when you hear the outcome. At 11:15, Steve Scalise joins us, U.S. Congressman, who is an individual who was the target of political violence. I talked to Steve in the aftermath of that event back in 2014, I believe. And I think he can bring an important perspective to what a lot of people are feeling this morning, myself included. At 10:30, we will visit with the Port of New Orleans, Kyle Gilmore, Port NOLA Director of Real Estate. We'll talk about the assets, the land, how big the port actually is, and why that's important to you. I wanted to start out this morning, and my attention earlier in the week was really about thanking you. Today marks the 8-year anniversary of me being on radio. And as I sat in my den, right when I got off air yesterday, because that's when the killing of Charlie Kirk occurred, I just reflected on a whole host of things. And one of the reasons why I made the transition from sheriff, I had been 40 years in law enforcement. I always believed and preached that good leaders know when it's time to leave. And for me, I thought it was time. And it was time to turn over the reins to the next generation to take the leadership of the organization. The organization had got the best of me, quite frankly. And I was fortunate enough to recognize that. And it occurred to me yesterday that never in my wildest dreams did I think that at the 8-year anniversary, we would have an individual who was a leader of a movement who went into the lion's den all the time, meaning surrounded by people that are not like thinkers, and wanted to engage in an intellectual debate. I didn't always agree with everything that Charlie Kirk ever stood for, but I loved his yearn, his intellect, his emotional intelligence, his reason, his sound moral compass, his faith, his justice, and his equity in the truest sense every time he stepped into the ring to debate in a very respectful way. And I left every one of those learning something from both sides. Some things he would embrace and highlight it in his responses. I truly enjoyed the intellectual jousting that went on. In fact, I've always been a big advocate of the Socratic method of teaching. It was the one where I walked away feeling that I learned more as opposed to less. The interesting thing here is what you realize and you recognize when you watch these debates unfold, and albeit, remember, Charlie did not go to college, did not have a college degree. He was reminded of that early onset in a lot of these debates, and it seemed as though kids would think that they would intimidate him and that there was some superiority to them having one. Well, it didn't take him long to realize that he was going to tie him up like a pretzel. Because he did the work. He educated himself. He didn't need a professor. He was able to synthesize material in a very quick way, cross-pollinate from one silo to another. I was always amazed. Starting when he was 18 and moving to the date of his death at 31 years of age, absolutely incredible individual. And what he did is he provided a safe space for people to be able to articulate what they're thinking and to engage. He used to say, prove me wrong. Give me an example of what you're talking about. Give me the data. Give me something to hang our hat on. His belief is that the more that we talk, the more that we embrace the essence of democracy. That we were better served for it. And the moment that we stopped talking to people that we disagreed with, the more likely that there would be violence that would rise out of that. And I agree. This notion of reasonable disagreement, for whatever reason, doesn't exist anymore. I'm afraid to say that human nature is you go to your strength when you're down and out. In fact, I used to ask my officers, do you read? How much do you read? I read the sports page. Nothing else? No. Human nature is you resort to your strength or that evil tone in your body when the chips are down. It's called fight or flight, survivability, and if you don't maintain an exercise in order to improve your intellect, and you're jousting with someone, and you're down and out, human nature is you resort to your strength. And for cowards, it's arming themselves and killing that individual that they just cannot match. Going back 8 years ago, one of the reasons that I even contemplated taking this job and doing so for a couple of months before I did so is I went through a process with my wife and talking about what impact can I have. The more research that I did on radio, the more that I recognized that there was a forum, there was a stage, there was a platform to engage with folks, to debate folks, to talk about things, to try and get to a better place with respect. I get stopped almost every night, last night, no different. Got stopped, people saying, I don't know how you do it. How do you exercise so much patience? I said, because it's important. I don't know what brought these folks that have a different opinion to where they are. It would be nice if on radio we could draw that out, figure it out, talk it through, They don't know how I got to where I am. We just jump to the conclusion right away as to whether we like it or not. And the simple expression of one's opinion is not begging of the question, do you like it or not? One of the things that Charlie Kirk says, and I firmly believe in, is learn every day, always be a learner. And the easiest path to learning is engaging with people that think differently from you. Plain and simple. And that's what I loved about this. If you don't think it's not a gut check, it's a gut. If you watch everybody that's been talking about this on news, especially the opinion folks that are on television, you will see that there's a sense of apprehension. That won't last long. And it won't last. It wasn't even a fleeting moment for me. Because as a result of yesterday's occurrence, my resolve is greater today. I will speak louder than ever. I will express my opinions in a more pronounced, proficient, efficient way, and I will not be deterred. And I certainly hope everyone in this business takes the same approach. Because if we don't, they win. This attempt on Charlie was to eliminate and kill a movement. And the idiocracy of it all is that the movement doesn't lie in the heart or the mind of one individual. He was an incredibly talented young man at 31 years of age. But it's not going to end there. And for those of us that have conservative-leaning tendencies, we need to make sure that it does not end there. And that we continue to do what we do each and every day with a bigger heart, a bigger mind, emotional intelligence, intellect, knowing that we feel comfortable within the sound moral compass that we've developed over our years. And not make any excuses for it. And not apologize for it. If you don't like what we don't have to say, it's okay. I don't really care. But this country is infected at the present time. And there's not enough antibiotics to clear up this infection. This is all about the win. We have these social influencers that think, you know, if they get another 5,000 people following some of the idiocracy that they're putting out there, that they're the big winner. Their influence is larger than anyone else. The other day I talked about one and just simply said, you're not the center of any universe. What are you doing? He's been attacking me ever since. For what reason? I did nothing. You did it to yourself. Claims it wasn't intentional. He videoed it. There's no other greater expression of intentionality than pressing the button on the video. And videoing exactly what you're doing. Now, it didn't turn out very well for him. Maybe that's the problem. But if you really believe that anyone like that or any others are going to deter what's going to be said here in this space on WWL and to all of the folks that were before me, that they would not be intimidated by any of this, and they were not, nor should they have been. You know, it's this infection that we're talking about is those that come with emotional intelligence and intellect and reason and want to debate and everything else, those are the underdogs in society today, right? It's those who we believe that have been oppressed. You know, they believe them to be the underdogs, but they're not the underdogs. It's those that are pointing out the inequities, those that are pointing out the inefficiencies, those that take the time to figure out why this is not effective or not as it relates to jobs that are being done in the public sector, the private sector, or otherwise. Those are the underdogs. Because on the other side, there's always an excuse. There's an excuse that gives them a level of comfort, that gives them the safe harbor, where they can wallow in mediocrity doing nothing, but being aggressive and trying to silence people, cancel people. That's how the whole cancel culture came about. These folks didn't have the ability to intellectually joust with anyone. Take the path of least resistance. We'll go cancel them. We'll shoot them. We'll kill them. We'll do whatever. They're cowards. And I certainly hope for this industry as a whole that no one's deterred by this, that everybody recognizes it for what it is. When asked of Charlie Kirk, what do you want to be remembered for? He used two words that drive me every day. He said, courage for my faith. And I would just say to Charlie, you succeeded. And what I will also say to those that I'm sure will find this irritating on many different levels, our thoughts and prayers are with the Kirk family. And I'll proudly say it again. Our thoughts and our prayers are with the Kirk family. Our thoughts in our prayers with the Kirk family. And they will be for a long, long time. We'll be right back.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by our own Congressman Steve Scalise, who was the target of a political assassination attempt. And quite frankly, he almost died. And he lives up to some of the ideals that I just talked about in my monologue, that he would not be deterred. And he has not been. And he has been a true leader as a result thereof on so many different fronts, and an inspiration to a lot of people who will not be silenced. And I thank him for saying, and welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, Noel. It's it's a tough, tough day, but I appreciate what you've been saying, and important that we keep saying it.
Steve, you knew Charlie. I mean, he walked into the lion's den and engaged folks, and entered, loved to debate. I loved watching him. He was a remarkable young man, a remarkable man of faith, has a beautiful wife, two beautiful children. And it seems as though we talk about and aspire to diversity all the time, but it doesn't seem like diversity of thought is what is on the minds of some of these folks. Your thoughts?
Yeah, there's so many sad things about what happened yesterday, Noel, and I'm sad, I'm angry, but I also think it's important that we reflect and remember how powerful of a person Charlie was in such a short time. I mean, 31 years old. Just think of the impact, Newell, that Charlie had on this country in just 31 years. I mean, he started a movement. How many young people at 18 years old, when he walked away from college because he didn't feel he was getting the kind of education, it was more an indoctrination, and he was surely ahead of his time on calling that out, but he said, I'm not going to be a part of this. I'm going to go and do something about it. And as an 18-year-old, to think I can do something about it and make a difference, and then actually go make a difference and impact millions of lives. I mean, not just young people. Well, he brought so many young people into the political movement, and not just people that agreed with him, by the way. He cherished the debate. You know, you disagree with me, that's fine. Come on and just explain what you believe in and why, and force people to rethink maybe what they believed in, which is so important. It's kind of the heart of why you go to college, is to, you know, to learn how to think, not to be told what to think. And I think that's what threatens so many people, too, on the other side, that, you know, here you've got this young person who was charismatic, who was inspirational. And then yet Charlie was also a family man. He was a man, as you said, of deep faith. And he's got this young family. And it's just so heartbreaking that these beautiful young kids will never really know their father the way they should. And yet he had such an impact in such a positive way on so many people. And hopefully his memory lives on, and the movement lives on. And I know there's a lot of talk about that right now.
Yeah, you know, Steve, I think you've already probably been asked this question. I'm not going to ask it of you, but I just want to start this conversation this way about, you know, folks saying, what can we do? What do we do? You know, and as I watched some of the social networks for about an hour last night, I had to turn it off because the level of insult and ignorance and just pure evil, people celebrating the death of a young man, so very excited about it, and actually giving examples of why they thought he should die. And it was basically a political position.
And as I sat there and watched this, I'm
like, there's no fixing this.
but you know what? You know, and this is where sunlight is the best disinfectant. I mean, you need anybody who dare go and celebrate the death of any other human being at a moment like this, you should let them be known. Let it be known who they are. And you know, maybe somebody around them will put a mirror in front of them and say, think about what you're saying and doing. And this is the time for you to, why do you have so much hate in your heart that you would celebrate the fact that somebody was murdered for what they believe in America? Is that really what you think this country should be? And is that who you want us to be? Because that's what you are trying to drive towards if you celebrate the death of someone like Charlie. And hopefully we can force other people to think about their actions and to stop demonizing somebody because of their political beliefs to the point where you think it's okay to commit violence against someone you disagree with. I mean, the greatest thing about this country is we can disagree with each other. We can speak out against our government. We can go to the ballot box and make your statement there. That's where we settle our differences. You know, we're not going to be a third world nation. We should never allow this to be okay.
Yeah. I don't know how to say this, but the reaction of the country, the reaction just inside the Beltway and the reaction in Congress seems to be markedly different today than it was when you were lying on a baseball field fighting for your life. And I'm completely mystified and confused by that. I mean, we didn't see this level of vitriol. And it's almost as though we've taken it to a new level.
Yeah, it's concerning. I mean, you almost think with, you know, with social media, people can just become caricatures, like cartoon characters or memes, where you don't even look at each other like human beings. I mean, you know, here is a young 31-year-old man with a wife with two young kids, and you know, we're hopefully going to real soon find out who the shooter is. Did he even care about that? Did he just think this was like a video game? I don't know, Noel. And you know, there's no justification for it, but it's getting it's getting worse. And, you know, we've gone through moments like this in our country. You know, in the 60s, you saw assassinations of public figures, not all political leaders, but public figures. And then we got beyond that for a while. But it's a point. We've all got to come to a point where we say, you know, we're not going to allow it and tolerate it. And people who celebrate this need to really check their compass.
Yeah, you know, disappointing for me yesterday, I had to be somewhere, and they flipped to the U.S. House because there was going to be a moment of silence and prayer. So I said, well, I want to wait, and I want to see it, and I want to participate. I want to pray with Congress. Congressman, I got to tell you, it was a huge disappointment. It was like, you know, after that unwound and people were saying and heckling and doing whatever, I didn't understand. I literally had tears in my eyes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, how it got to that, and I saw, I was there, and you're just like, do you not even recognize the moment that we're in? Shouldn't matter what the political leanings of the person are. It's bad for America when something like this happens. And you know, can everybody at least put their armor down for a moment and recognize the humanity?
Yeah, it doesn't make you less. You know, it makes you more. And I don't know why we've lost sight of that. I don't know. And I'm sure, you know, you knew Charlie. I didn't. I was always intrigued by him. I loved to watch his debates. And I was just always amazed at his impact on folks. And I got to see so many aha moments where I think he actually got a lot of the folks that he debated to kind of pause and look inward and, you know, say, I might want to rethink what I've been doing and saying here. You know, and I think the same worked for Charlie. So, you know, there were some times where he said, yeah, I never thought about it that way. Didn't consider it, but I will.
And ultimately, again, why do you go to college? You go there to learn and challenge what you're thinking and sharpen what you're thinking. Maybe if you disagreed with him, maybe you understood better why you disagreed, but maybe you also questioned what you originally believed, and now you can understand the other point of view. And everybody should be willing to kind of have that open debate with other people. And if you can't defend your position, maybe your position's wrong. And that's how Charlie approached it.
Congressman, final thoughts?
You know, it's a sad time, and there is a lot of anger, but it's also a time, and I think Charlie, of all people, would appreciate this, where we should pray. And I'm glad that you said, let's pray for Charlie and his family, because they need it. You know, they need it. Charlie's hopefully going up to heaven. He believes in God. Let him have that moment. But his family's going to be hurting for a long time, and let's keep them in our prayers as well.
And we'll pray for a long, long time. And I've never stopped praying for you.
I appreciate it. And I feel the prayers. I mean, I felt the prayers. It matters for people who are out there that maybe didn't know Charlie, who didn't know me. I get it all the time, and they're like, I never met you before, but I prayed for you, and I felt those prayers when I needed them, and I really needed them. And God answered a lot of prayers. He answers prayers, and it's important that we pray now.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I know you're incredibly busy, but I thought it was really important for your constituents, my listening audience, to hear your voice in the aftermath of this tragedy. And just thank you, and you're in our prayers.
Well, appreciate your time on this, and God bless you.
Same. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Appreciate a lot of the texts coming in. Someone asked about the anniversary of the 9/11 attack 24 years ago today. And this was actually the first day that I was on radio. And I did it in honor of the men and women of the first responder community. And that's why I started on 9/11 in this new career, knowing full well that, you know, I had hoped to bring a voice for law enforcement, for first responders, because of my experiences over so many years, to tell their story, day in and day out, and talk about the difficulties of the job and what they do and the challenges that they have. And it was my way, in a small way, of honoring the sacrifices that so many had made over the years, and in particular those that made sacrifices in New York and at the Pentagon and in Shanksville and, this event and the aftermath, quite frankly, of this event and continuing today with so many diseases that people are suffering from the rubble of the Twin Towers and some of the things that they were compelled to breathe in. They didn't care. They went in where the danger was, and many, many, many ended up losing their life. The texter also says, can you tell us how that affected you? And I think it affected everyone. It was a gut check for the country. We had been attacked. A lot of uncertainty. At that time, Sheriff Harry Lee was actually out of town. He was out of the country and couldn't get back into the country. So I had control of the department. I also was at the airport. They grounded everything. I'd never seen that happen before. A lot of uncertainty there, too. It was really kind of scary. People calling, it's amazing how many of your friends and family you find out that are flying somewhere that you didn't know about because everybody started calling, and most of them knew that I was in charge of the law enforcement detachment at the airport. And it kind of got, a little scary about the day, quite frankly, as the uncertainty grew, and we were all glued to the TV. You see the first tower and then the second tower. And then, once the second tower was hit, you knew that this was not some kind of random thing, and the way that the news, I'm sure everybody remembers, was coming across was creating probably more confusion as opposed to clearing up exactly what was going on. But what I remember most about 9/11 is afterwards and how people came together. And what I remember most is standing at Causeway and Vets with a firefighter's boot, collecting money to make sure that we're able to help the families that were impacted there. What I remember most was the patriotism that was exhibited at that point in time. What I remember most was the pride that everyone had. What I remember most is that no one was making an excuse for being an American. What I remember most is that it presented a clearer picture that this country is the best country to live in. And what I remember most is that there was little or no debate about it. The D, the R, the I, and whatever other label we choose to put behind our name, disappeared for a healthy period of time. Didn't matter. It was so refreshing. In spite of the tragedy that we had experienced, it was very interesting about human nature and how easily we can put that aside when we choose and when we want to. It's a choice. And it became evident to me that we are capable. We are capable. Why we don't make some of these choices is beyond me. And I mean it. When I saw that crazy show in the House of Representatives yesterday, people objecting to saying a prayer and having a moment of silence as it relates to the death of Charlie Kirk, I had a tear in my eye. I was going to pray with them, but no. Obviously, there were those in there that didn't want that to happen. They did not want a repeat of the aftermath of 9/11. That was too encouraging. That was too beautiful. That was wonderful. That was one of the greatest experiences of my life. And I suspect there were many in there of age that remember that, and they were not going to allow that to be this moment on that day yesterday, September the 10th. And unfortunately, that's a tragedy. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with the Port of New Orleans Kyle Gilmore, the Port NOLA Director of Real Estate. We'll be talking about all that they have under their organization. And in the back half of the 11 o'clock hour, we'll visit with Patrick Button, Associate Professor of Economics at Tulane University. It's a recent article that was written outlining if we did things to the wealthy for taxes, what would the impact be?
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.